Thanks, J Rod. Hey everybody, my name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. I live in Dublin here in, well, I live in Kildare in Ireland, where I'm from Dublin, as you can probably hear the accent. But yeah, I'm so glad I'm a member of AA, because my last years of drinking were absolute hell. All the not yets happened, you know. I grew up in a culture where drinking and heavy drinking is the norm and expected, and that's the way it is. And to actually, you know, to turn around and not drink and not go to a pub, here in where I'm from, it's just, you know, there must be something wrong with you. If it, you know, and it's really only when you get sober you realize, oh my God, you know, what alcohol actually does and what we take for granted as being the norm, here. But anyway, a little bit about myself. I started drinking very young because of my background growing up, where I came from, full of fear, full of anxiety. And I grew up in a rough neighborhood, which, you know, you weren't allowed to show fear, so it was horrible being a kid. And after my first drink, I remember that feeling of filling up and saying, "This is great, I'm Bill Lutt." And as it says in the book, as Bill says in the book himself, "I've arrived," and that's exactly how I felt. It was, "I've arrived." And yeah, I've just been drinking since then, and I was age 15, 14 or 15 then. And I was always a solitary drinker as well. I drink with the guys along the canals, and I drink with the guys in flat in different apartments and stuff like that. But I also used to head off to the park on my own with, you know, two flagons of cider, and I'd sit there for the day drinking, you know. And to me, that was just that was just what I wanted to do, and you know, nobody was going to stop me. I was lucky enough in that I stayed in education, and you know, I don't know where I got my brains from, or some of my brains from, but it was a Jekyll and Hyde, definitely kind of life for me, because coming from one background and the drinking and the partying and the, you know, not giving a shit, pardon me French, and going on to university and, you know, studying and getting my degrees and the whole lot, and then starting up my own business. It really was two different people, because there was Bill the professional who mixed with all these well-dressed, well-spoken people, and then there was the real Bill with the tattoos and the, you know, the love of rum and vodka and everything else. And for 30 years, it was great. It was, you know, like I look back and I had some great fun drinking. But also, when I came into the program and I look back, I also see a lot of damage and carnage that I did cause. But really, what brought me into AA at the start was in the last 2 years of my drinking. I was in a business partnership, and that was all going south. My marriage was going south, and we had two children. The first child, my first daughter that came along, my wife had a cesarean in the hospital, and I remember leaving that night and saying, "I'll be back first thing in the morning, so you can look after yourself and I'll mind the child." And she asked me not to go drinking. I said, "Oh God, I won't." And I meant it, you know. And 20 minutes later, I was in a bar with someone working the top shelf of expensive whiskies, because you have to drink expensive whiskies because of the birth of your child, like, you know, just crazy. But I don't remember getting home. And I was so used to blackouts. Blackouts became the norm. I don't remember getting home. And I didn't get up the next day. I woke up at 6:30 the next evening on the sofa, still wearing the clothes I had on the night before, and was wandering around the house, and then remembered, oh my, we have a baby in that, And when I went up and all the grief that was there, I couldn't see my part in it. I was just like, and I say my part, I mean, it was me, it was only me. There was only my part. But I couldn't see that. It was all everybody else's fault. I don't know why they were ruining my reason for going out. I was allowed to celebrate as well. It was my daughter. And I swore I'd give the drink up then. And I didn't. And I just kept going and I kept going. So 2 years before my sobriety date, I tried to get well myself because I knew everything. I knew how to do this. And, nobody can do anything. I'm always the first one to say you can do anything you want to do. So I was there going like, nothing has power over me. This is all rubbish. And it didn't work. I went through 8 different detoxes in about 18 months, 4 of them in the hospital, 2 of them under the GP doctor's supervision, and 2 of them where I was shopping around with doctors and trying to do it myself and the whole lot. And to be honest, I was drinking while I was taking the detox medication. I was still drinking, and I started to develop a lot of health problems because of it, mental and physical. And it got to the point where, I won't go into war stories, but Christmas of 22 going into 23, I was in such a rush home from my job to get drink into me. And I had the children's presents in the back of the boot, and I jumped. My wife was out with the kids, and I jumped out of the car, and I ran into the house because I wanted to get as much drink into me as possible before she came home. So, then I could try to look normal. And I locked the car door, and so Christmas night when the kids went to bed, we couldn't get the car open to get the presents out. And my kids were 4 and 7, and of course my wife was crying. She's like, what are we going to do? It's Christmas Eve, 11 o'clock at night. And I just thought this was all a big joke. I was like, look, sure, we'll do it again. We'll say Santa forgot, and that's how selfish and that's how blind I was. That's how totally self-obsessed I was. I didn't even care whether the kids got their presents on Christmas morning because my drinking had to come first. That went on for another year. Thankfully, we did get the presents out. A neighbor came over and helped open the door. But I drank for another year. And in that year, I developed liver cirrhosis. And with liver cirrhosis came the jaundice and what's called ascites, which is where fluid fills the abdominal cavity, because you're not eating, so the bile fills it. And the only way they can do that and get rid of it is put a needle in through the side and actually drain this stuff. And I mean, they took 6.5 liters off my belly the first time in the hospital. I was in psychosis. I wasn't aware I was in psychosis, but I was hearing voices. I was seeing things, but I was hearing things more than anything else. And I was convinced my father-in-law was following me around in the car. I was still driving. I was drink driving. And how I managed to function, I don't know, because I was drinking that much. I actually got out of the hospital bed when I asked the nurses to take the catheter out because it was hurting me for a couple of hours. And they said, yeah, no problem. And I snuck out to the supermarket out across the road. And I got 2 bottles of wine and I sat down and I drank them before I got back to the hospital, thinking no one would notice. I was in hospital, as I said, four times medically for that before I ended up going to the psychiatric ward because my wife and my family just, I'd just gone, my head had gone. And I was admitted to the psychiatric ward. They were trying to have me committed, but because of the laws here with data protection, they couldn't actually do it. So after 3 weeks in the psychiatric, we had a meeting and they said to me, "We can't keep you here." And I said, "No, well, I feel great now." And I walked out and I rang my wife and I said, "You know, I'm cured. Come and get me." When she came to get me, I was sitting on the side of the road with a load of alcohol, drinking it. And, you know, I mean, I hadn't left the hospital. I literally walked across the road from the psychiatric hospital and started drinking again. And still, I could not see any problem with it. I thought it was all everybody's fault. It was the stress I was under. It was how I was feeling, you know, and the resentments I had against everybody. I was so angry and so, you know, why wouldn't he just leave me alone? So the second time I was admitted to the psychiatric ward, they had to put me back into the medical hospital first because they said I was too sick. And at this stage, I was pure yellow, with jaundice, and my hair had gone. My hair was starting to go really thin. The ascites was there. I had developed what's called varices, which is bleeding of the veins in the esophagus, which comes with liver damage, and also hepatic encephalopathy, which is what's called swelling in the brain. Now, I knew nothing about all this, that alcohol could cause all this. And the only reason I'm sharing this is when I was in treatment, when I eventually got into treatment, we were doing courses on this. And it was only because I had it that I knew about it. But I was with 15 other people who were in detox on a rehab course with me, who never even heard of any of this. And it was just, I was just blown away. I was like, "Oh my God!" Like, you know, it's, and most of us just think it's the damage that we do to everybody else and the whole lot, but it's the damage we do to ourselves. And you know, it was only when I finally got sober, and what happened was I went on a me last bender, and my wife had left, I'd taken the kids, my business partner had broke up, everything was gone to shit, and I just wanted to die. And I remember just coming back into the house with a load of alcohol. Now, I had alcohol hidden everywhere, and I don't remember anything else. And on a Wednesday morning, my wife came in, and she was dropping the kids to school, and she pulled up outside, and she wouldn't let them come in just in case there was something she'd see, they'd see in the house, and I was passed out on the floor. So when she came in, she picked me up, brought me to the hospital, rang the doctor, said he's at it again. They took me in. I won't go through everything, but all I'll say is when I did wake up at one point, the cardiac team were around me, and I remember the doctor saying to me, "Breathe, breathe, Bill." And you know what? That's my favorite word today. My favorite word today is breathe. I just, whenever something is going wrong in my life, I just go, "Stop, Bill, breathe." Because whatever happened in that hospital, I surrendered. I wasn't aware I'd surrendered yet, but I could feel the weight of something lifted off. And then I see 5 minutes there coming up. So I turned up for an AA meeting when I got out of rehab. And wasn't sure whether I was in this AA meeting, a really big meeting, in-person meeting, and I was sitting there thinking, I can't be one of these guys, you know. But something kept me coming back. I didn't go drinking when I left. I had planned to go drinking after the meeting, and I didn't. I went home, and I kept coming back, and I kept coming back. And I remember a lady doing a lady speaker at one of the yearly meetings, and she said, "You know, if you don't get AA, AA will get you." So keep coming back. Don't be, and she was speaking, it was almost as if she was speaking to me because I was hearing this language that everybody was using, like, 3, 7, 11,
Oh, I've met some.
86 to 88, thank you. 86 to 88, get on your knees, let go, let God. I'm sitting in a room looking at the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the promises in front of me, and I'm going, what the heck, and that made me stay. I was like, okay, I'm not getting this, but I'm going to stay. And I haven't left. I'm 883 days sober today. So that's 2 years, 5 months, and a week. And it's just been the best thing ever. It's just been the best thing ever. There's nobody on my phone. I have only AA members apart from good friends that and family, because AA is my family now. Everything I have my business back. I have a God in my life that you would not believe. I mean, I was the biggest atheist going, and God didn't just come on the educational variety. I mean, he picked me up and he kicked my butt and just basically went, you've work to do, let's go. And I'm so grateful. When I was getting out of the car that last day at the hospital, and my wife was saying, I'll see you, I looked back at my two children and they were sitting in their school uniforms and they both had suitors in their mouth and they were just looking at me as I was being taken out by the docs. And the look on their face was one of, it wasn't fear, it wasn't anger, it wasn't anything like that. It was disbelief. It was like, what the hell is going on? Where's me dad? And it's crazy because I can't remember most of anything else, but I remember that moment in that car. And, this disease is so cunning, baffling, and powerful that nothing, it when the progression starts, nothing will stop you drinking. Not the love for your children, not the love for your spouse, not the love for yourself. And, if you've any doubt that in what I say, stick around AA and listen to the stories. Stick around and be willing to listen. And AA will get you before you get AA, but sobriety is in here, and there's nowhere else I'd love to be on a Saturday or a Sunday night or any night of the week except in an AA meeting with a bunch of alcoholics that, I have so much in common with, regardless of what part of the world they're in, what color, creed, gender, whatever. We all have similar stories. So when you come in, try to listen for the similarities rather than the differences. And that's really what makes us connect. And there's nothing, I was on the phone to someone this morning and he's a good friend of mine in AA and he said, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, there's nothing like it. And I said, yeah. And he said, he said, what made you call me this morning? And I said, I don't know. I was sitting out the back. It was a lovely day. And I just said, I thought of you. And he said, I really appreciate that. That to me is God tapping me on the shoulder, going, you need to ring Jay. Look for the little coincidences. If you can't find a higher power, just hang on. Because God is not lost. We are. And, if you're willing to look inwards, he'll be there. Okay, I'll leave it at that. I don't want to go on anymore. Thanks.